Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails and answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to contact us or send us a favorite recipe, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. You know, this time we're going to be talking about motivation and what it is that makes us want to participate in the group, makes us want to lead it, and makes us want to reach a successful conclusion. Mm-hmm. So, as we often do in this show, because we are practical people and not just theorists, we're going to start by defining motivation within our context. Mm-hmm. Within the context of a seminar, a workshop, an alternative dispute resolution, a mediation, whatever it is that we're doing, and we are usually the leader, of course, but within our context, what is motivation? Oh my, I see there's a lot of you, and thank you very much, all of you, for being here and for all of your participation. Yes, thank you. Thank you for listening and coming. Let's see. Aidan's and a lot of people are saying that motivation within our context, and really, I suppose motivation always in every context, because this is a very good definition, a very, very broad one, is a need or desire to act. Motivation is a need or desire to act. Yes, we want to see something done. We need something to be done because we are being the subject of an unfairness, perhaps. Yes, the need or desire to act. Mm-hmm. Shalene and others are adding that motivation is the reason why we have joined the group. Mm-hmm. Because that's our need or desire to act, and that's our reason why we have joined the group. Because, of course, it is always better, well, always being a big word, but oftentimes it is better to act with a group because you get different ideas, because you get different viewpoints, because you get different, well, yeah, people are saying different networked connections. That's true, too. People know, everybody in the group knows somebody different who they can connect with and ask for help or advice. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes if you're trying to effectuate change, the more people who want it, the bigger the impact the group will have. Pardon me. Goodness, I seem to be clearing my throat today. Goes to show it's a live show. Excuse me. Helen and others are saying that motivation is the reason the participants care about the outcome. The reason the participants care about the outcome. Yeah, why do we care? Sometimes, there's a very good point that's being made, and thank you all for being here, for all of your participation. Sometimes, some of the participants, hopefully not all of them, don't actually care, right? They don't. They don't care about the outcome. They don't care about the group. They have their motivation to be there is for some reason they've been forced. Mm-hmm. They're required to be there, but they really don't want to be, and they don't care. This is an interesting group dynamic. Mm-hmm. And it depends why they've been forced. Yes. You know, quite a few people are bringing up all kinds of groups, and thank you for all of your participation, are bringing up groups where people truly are forced to come, like in the United States and other places too, I'm certain. If you drive inebriated, if you drunk drive, you're required, and you get caught, of course, and you're required to get your driver's license back, you're required to go to classes about sobriety and like that. And that's a requirement. You need, your motivation is to get your driver's license back, right? But your motivation might not be to learn anything, depending on your personality, right? Yeah. And people are giving all kinds of examples like that, like community service that's forced because you got caught doing what in the United States would be called a misdemeanor, a small crime, and your punishment is not jail. And not, well, there may be a money fine also, but if you can't pay it or in addition to a money fine, you are required to do some sort of community service. I don't know, do food packing or something. You know what I mean? Some sort of a thing that you're, in order to fulfill the debt, in order to fulfill the requirement, in order to get back, to not be in trouble with the law, perhaps, you're required to go and take some sort of a class, join some sort of a group. Yeah. Your motivation, and we're going to talk about different kinds of motivation, because the next question is going to be what motivates our participants. And you know there's two types of motivation. And the motivation we're talking about now, we are really motivated by fear. You want to be, you don't want to be in trouble with the law. You're scared that you won't get your driver's license back. You won't be able to drive. If when you're motivated by kind of a negative like that, which I got to tell you does not make you work any harder, and that's an interesting group dynamic, and we'll talk about it. That's called restrictive motivation, right? And that's as opposed to like a benefit motivation. A good motivation, something you want to see. Restrictive motivation is an interesting, yeah, we might as well talk about it now. People are asking about how you handle the group dynamic with restrictive motivation. Now, I must confess that I'm not an expert on it, so I'm going to need you guys to help me, and thank you for all of your participation. I don't usually see a group, in fact, I don't do that kind of group, so I don't ever see them, where everybody in the group, basically speaking, doesn't want to be there. They've been forced. It's an intrusion into their lives, and they've got to do it. A lot of people are saying, Takai and others are saying, that when you have that kind of a group dynamic, you need to recognize it. And what you really are is you're the enforcer. You require that they do a certain amount of work, a certain amount of participation, in order to get a grade, in order to get a passing grade, in order to be done with it. Yeah. So you're kind of, I suppose enforcer is a good word for it. People are saying teacher. Mm-hmm. You're not what we usually talk about, where you're a third-party impartial who is helping the group get together to reach a common goal. The group doesn't need to know what, the group knows what the common goal is. It's real specific. We need to get our driver's license back, and therefore you need to have, yeah, it's a real good point. Thomas and others are saying that they've taught those kind of groups. In fact, some of you are professionals and do that. And you need to have serious rules, and you, the leader, the teacher, people are calling an enforcer. Okay, we'll call it teacher. The instructor, okay? You as the person in charge, whatever you want to deem that title to be, the person in charge actually has to have a real strict set of rules. You know how in Recipe for Peace now we say that we don't have rules, whatever works? But we've got civility rules, right? The ones where you can't be rude, where you have to take your turn and like that. You've, in those kinds of group dynamics where there's actually kind of a hostile group dynamic, not really hostile to the other participants because they're all in the same boat, right? But they want to be annoyed at someone, and you're the administrator of it. You're the face of what they don't want to be at, right? Because they don't want to be taking the drunk driving classes. They don't want to be taking the how the anger management class, they don't want to be doing a community service, I don't know, cleaning something for the common good, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah, community service, people are talking about all kinds of community service. It's usually time-consuming, boring, somewhat arduous, and it's you're not there because of the love for the organization that you're working for. Does that make sense? Yeah. In any event, the idea is that the person in charge, the leader, must have very firm control, mm-hmm, and must have actual guidelines and check boxes to fulfill. And you do have the ultimate power, though. You can flunk them. Yeah. You cannot give them a passing grade, and then they won't get whatever the restrictive motivation was. They won't get back their license. They won't get a clean record. You see what I mean? So that's a very big deal motivation. Yeah, good. So what motivates participants? That's a restrictive motivation. I fear not getting what I want, so I will fulfill my obligation to this class, even though, or this group, even though I hate it. Yeah. This is not what's known as voluntary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what does motivate our participants now that we've talked about restrictive a little bit? And yes, I see that a lot of you have actually been in groups. All right. Yeah, it's a good point that sometimes restrictive motivation, as some of you have been participants, and sometimes restrictive motivation, you're forced to do something because of something that you need, right? The class, the permit, the whatever it is. But sometimes when you go, and this is true, the class dynamic changes because the participants kind of form a bond, or they see a need for it to be changed. Yeah, sometimes it's a life-affirming, life-interesting experience, and you go, wow, that was not run properly. Mm-hmm. That could have been a lot better. I have that sometimes. Sometimes I see groups like that. We've all had that. We see an attempt to assist. And, you know, I'm going to bring up Rotary again. And you guys know that I use Rotary as an example sometimes. I'm actually a member of Rotary. And Rotary's mission is service above self. It is international. Probably all of you have heard of it. And if you haven't, there's probably a chapter of Rotary somewhere in your hometown or in the nearby one because it is truly international. I, of course, belong to an American-based one. But we can travel all over the world and see and go to other Rotary clubs. It's one of the great things about Rotary. And sometimes when you go to help with Rotary and you're just a participant, and it's not restricted, we don't fear anything, but in Rotary there is kind of a restrictive motivation. It's mostly peer pressure, right? Because peer pressure is a motivator too. Yeah, people are talking about peer pressure as a motivator and other participant pressure. Yeah, that's peer pressure. And peer pressure is a great motivator because other people are watching to see if you do a good enough job. Mm-hmm. Because they've come to do a good job. And if you're just a hanger-oner, you better not be. Yeah, because you're going to see them again. Right? Right. And sometimes when you go to, and Rotary has a service requirement. You have to go and do so many hours of community service to remain a Rotarian, to fulfill your obligation as a Rotarian. Mm-hmm. Now, we generally do it as a group. The Rotary group decides, our chapter, so to speak, our club, decides what it is that we're going to do as a group. We're going to, well, sometimes we do some sort of disaster work. we pack food and supplies and send it, and like that, we do stuff. We do, I don't know, teaching, like a preschool, like that. We usually go as a group. But sometimes we deal with other clubs, too, because it's kind of a big project, right? Yeah. And there's a thing called First Harvest where we pack all kinds of fruits and things, and they're very good. But sometimes you see something and you go, you know, that could have done better. That could have been more organized. That could have been done in a more efficient manner. That could have been done more fun so that more people would like to participate. It was kind of not very fulfilling, right? Yeah. And so sometimes when you join a group with a restrictive motivation, and really the Rotary stuff, you don't necessarily have an opinion about the activity so much as you have an opinion about your group and that you're trying to do something good for the world, for the community, right? Yeah, but it might not be a community project you really care about. But when you're sitting there, you go, or you're working at it, you go, you know, that I can see something wrong with that that could make it a lot better. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had that at a festival where we manned some booths. Mm-hmm. You know, people come, they pay, we were manning information booths, really. It wasn't really a game, but we were manning information booths. And the whole thing was kind of not very organized. You know what I mean? Just kind of. And it was going to be annual. So the next year, before we came, we actually were motivated, because we were coming again, to help the organizers. Yeah. To tighten it, to make it more organized, to really get it more crisp. Because everybody was a volunteer, but we all needed to put in our expertise, yeah, to make sure that everything ran more smoothly. And it was a much better attended event, because word got out, social media, that it was really fun, and it was really interesting. Yeah. Oh, you so know Rotary. A lot of you guys are Rotarians. Thank you all for being here. And people are saying, and there was free food. Yes, there was. Because one of the things that gets the public to come is if you have treats, right? Yes. There was not only free food, there is, it's kind of like a health fair. There's all kinds of free diagnostic stuff. You can get your weight, and you can get your blood pressure and like that. Yeah, there's free stuff. But it still needs to be organized. I mean, if you come, you have to have the stuff available, right? And be able to talk about it and to lead people in. And yes, maybe even make them Rotarian members. So, I digressed. But that is motivation that starts out as restrictive. I've got peer pressure. God, I don't want to go to this. My feet hurt, and I'm going to have to stand in the heat and pass stuff out and smile. And I don't care, really, but I do care that I fulfill my obligation to my Rotary Club and everybody else is going. But it turns into, wow, let's make this better so that the message is more effective. And so that more people come, so more people can be served. Yeah. So it's very possible that restrictive changes to benefit, social good benefit. Didn't benefit me, but it benefited the social good. Yeah. And it seems like you're doing something good for the world and not just standing there kind of looking bored and shifting from foot to foot because there's nothing on your table to give out. Yeah, that's no good. Just waste your time. Motivate our participants. That was a motivation for me as a participant, right? Yeah, I was motivated to think, gee, I don't want to do this again next year. Let's make it better. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about benefit first, because that restrictive is a little more unusual, and we've kind of talked about it. So let's talk about benefit motivation, right? It's motivation that's good and not kind of kind of adverse, maybe changes into better motivation, you know, changes towards good. But restrictive kind of stays restrictive a lot because it's that kind of a group, that kind of a motivation of loss, so to speak, or fear. So what benefits motivation do our participants have? Yes, we've got a winner. Because a lot of people, I'm going to take a little sip of water, excuse me. Thank you. Seem to be clearing my throat quite a bit. There we go. So, what positive motivation do our participants usually have? And we've got a winner. A lot of people are saying economic. Mm-hmm. And economic motivation, it's very strong. And, you know, it's very specific. I think economic motivation is a great thing because it's really a specific motivation and we all understand what it is that you want. A specific economic motivation. Yeah. We've got a whole bunch of them. Let's see. Diane and others are saying business concerns. Something's affecting my business, affecting my livelihood. I'd like it changed. Yeah. I'd like something to be done. I'm going to maybe band together with the other business owners who are also affected. You know, nothing more motivating than money, right? As Paul says, a funding need. We have a project, and it's a good project, but it needs funding. We need to get some sort of funds in so that we can, perhaps hire a professional. We can get supplies, right? Yeah. A funding need is a real good economic one. You know, it's like Rotary. We bring stuff, so we fund things. You know, and we've talked about polio eradication. Wow, that took lots of funding. You know, just probably trillions of dollars over the years. Because you needed people to come. You needed supplies. You needed the vaccine. You know, you needed the whole thing, funding needs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ginny and others are also saying that groups tend to get together more and pool their resources more during an economic downturn. Ordinarily, you might have people funding something themselves, right? But it's been an economic downturn, so we need to get together and pool our resources, or find another source, yes, like grant writing. Yeah, people are saying grant writing. You know, I don't know about other places in the world, but in the United States, and I'm sure this is true a lot of places, you get grants from the government or from organizations that have funds. And grant writing is in and of itself an entire profession, an entire thought, an entire way. It's an entire group in and of itself to get something. The grant writing needs to be, I don't know how to put this nice, it needs to be proper. It needs to look right so that it'll get looked at. Yeah. So grant writing in an economic downturn that you need grants and funding, you got to get together as a group because you might need to fund the grant writing. Isn't that weird? But it's true. Or you might, as a group, write the grant, yeah, if you've got some knowledge. And also, you know, if you're very motivated, I've been in groups where we actually go off into subcommittees and research what other grants have looked like, how the wording was, what it should look like. We might hire someone, but we want to hire the right person. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of grant applications are indeed public, depending on the organization who's giving the grants. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, this is an interesting point that Chad and others are making. It's not, in addition to the economics of it and to the funding and the economic downturn and they might need a grant, yeah. One of the biggest motivators for participants, and this is absolutely true, and it sounds kind of like, well, that's a restrictive. No, not really. But one of the biggest motivators for groups, for getting together to effectuate a change of some sort is when the opposing side receives funding. Yeah, Chad and others are saying that that's the biggest economic motivator. The other guy's got money. Mm-hmm. The opposing side receives funding. And you go, wait a minute. We need that. There's another side to that issue, and we are on it. Yeah, when the opposing side gets funding. Good point. So what other kind besides economic? What other kind of motivation is there? Yeah, you get economic. What other kind? How about social change? We've got a lot of people talking about social change. Megan says that a lot of times, and this is true everywhere, but especially when you've got ballot voting, when you've got a democracy and you have, in the United States, and this is true of a lot of governments, the government, you've got the big government, the federal government, and we vote on that too. You vote mainly for people, for the federal government, who you think will represent you properly. And yeah, I know that you vote for other things too, like, but basically speaking, that's what the big federal vote is. And then you've got state, and that's pretty far away in its way too, but they're more beholden to the people in their state and their interests, mostly economic, I must confess, and it's social and like that. But they, so you've got state government. And then, because government's pervasive, then you've got all kinds of localish governments. Oh, you've got city, you've got county, you've got school district, you've got sewer district, you've got taxing district. Oh, just name a thing. There's something that's a governmental entity type that has some sway over what you can or can't do. And most of it is voted upon. Yes? So what I'm telling you is that there's lots of regional type voting, and there is, as Megan says, social change by ballot, where you get to vote for something. But you need to get it on the ballot, on the voting ballot. We vote lots in the United States, and we vote at certain times. So there are ballots, and believe me, you know, and a lot of those ballots, you think, oh my God, how many things are on a ballot? Lots. You know, you've got the main, the definite one about who you're voting for to be like your state representative. But the rest of it is measures, which is what they're called, that the citizens, citizen groups, have gotten together and they have placed their want on the ballot. Now, how do they do that? Well, they need some funding, because what they need to do is they need to collect enough signatures. Citizen signatures will do it. Yeah, you pay a very small fee. It's like really a small fee. That's not the funding part. But you need to get your organization together and collect signatures. And literally, people go out onto the streets with a clipboard and they collect signatures. Honest to God, they go to organizations. They collect signatures. I believe you can even do it online now at certain websites. But you see what I'm telling you is this needs a lot of organization. It needs and it needs funding, yes. And then once something is on the ballot, then you have a public awareness war. Because you got to get people to get to the voting booth and vote for you. Yeah. And quite frankly, in most places, a lot of people, Americans tend to vote, but a lot of times people vote for the candidates, but they don't finish the ballot and vote for all the stuff on the bottom because they are unaware of it. They can't think about it that fast. They don't know which one to vote for. And sometimes, yeah, it's a good point. sometimes the ballot's a little confusing. You're not sure what it is that thing wants because it's worded funny. And people didn't realize it when they worded it. It just happens. You know how that is. And so you have to get public awareness campaign. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's actually old-fashioned media, somewhat at least. And old-fashioned media is expensive. Yeah. A quarter-page ad in the really local business journal, for example. Mm-hmm. Because we just did this for a group. And when we looked into it for a group, a quarter-page ad in the local business journal, which tells you they have a circulation of 18,000, which is not very many, right? That's not that many people. And you've got to figure it's a little bit padded, right? Because that's not how many papers they sell per month. That's how many they estimate read it. It's hard to know. But that's not very many human eyes, right? And it is only once, and it's weekly. So it runs for one, I think it's weekly. Maybe it's monthly. Comes out a lot, though. I think, it's only one time in the paper. It's $3,200, $3,200. That's a lot of money. Now, they give you a little bit of a discount if you do it lots, but that's, and you have to figure out whether as a group, whether or not that is the right venue for running the ad, see? Yeah, traditional media is extremely expensive. We actually decided not to. We decided to go social media, which is expensive, too, if you do it right, because you need an expert to do it for you, to help you, if you don't have an expert in the group. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't just go out there and blog something. It has to be read, right? And there's an awful lot of stuff on social media, so that's still funding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so funding. Good point. Mm-hmm. What other... So that's economics, right? Mm-hmm. And getting it on the ballot for social change. We'll go back to social change. Really, we will. So getting it on the ballot. That has to do with economics, too. And why do you want it on the ballot? Might be social change, right? Might be the good of people. Might be righting an inequality. Mm-hmm. One of the things, in fact, we've got a whole... bunch of stuff that I'm going to call social change. I'm going to call it righting a wrong, right? Righting a wrong. Something's wrong, and it doesn't really affect us economically. That's not the problem. We're not in it for the money. It's just wrong, and we get together with other like-minded people to change something. For Barry and others are saying social inequality. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And economic inequality, Kalinda and others are saying economic inequality. Mm-hmm. Those two things are being fought about right in my local area because you know in the United States we have a minimum wage law. Employers must pay a certain minimum wage. But the minimum federally mandated wage, and we've already talked about the various levels of government, is low. I can't remember what it is. It's like $9 an hour or something. But there are parts of the country where the living wage, it costs more to live there in some parts of the country than in others. Oh, I don't know if they're more desirable or not, but they're more expensive, okay? And so local governments have set higher minimum wages. Mm-hmm. And in my part of the United States, there is a ballot measure that's trying to promote the highest minimum wage in the country. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we've got groups banding together on both sides because that's economic interest. And it's also social and economic inequality. So you've got three kinds of groups. You've got employers who say that it will really cut into the bottom line and that they can't afford it, they'll have to close. You've got workers who would really like it, of course. That's their economics. And you've got the people who are not really economically directly affected, but they think that it's either a good or bad idea from a social perspective. Yeah. So anyway, what other kind of writing a wrong? How about something that's bigotry? Mm-hmm. Thomas and others are talking about something that is discrimination. It's bigotry. It is kind of, when it was done, nobody thought about it, but now we're more socially aware. There's a fight in the United States about, I think they're football teams, the Redskins football teams, yeah, that some of the professional teams and the college teams have Native American symbols that were originally thought to evoke bravery and I don't know, courage and ability to run really fast and like that. And they were considered to be kind of noble. But now there is a protest, a group protest, Native Americans and also other people, that the symbols promote stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of bigotry. They're not good. See, social change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're more aware of stereotypes now, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What other kind of writing a wrong? Look, I'm going to call this access limitation. Gabe and others are talking about the ability to have access to services and to education and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's oftentimes intertwined with government because there needs to be a change, perhaps, about how one gets a loan to get to school, how one has access to the same information. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's such a thing as information access with the government, too, yes. Mm-hmm. That's Privacy Act. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What other kinds of participant motivation that is beneficial do we have? Mm-hmm. You know what? Thank you for all of your participation. This is just lovely. Thank you for being here, and thank you for your participation. I'm going to call this tradition change because, as opposed to righting a wrong, because it's not really wrong in and of itself, like inequality and bigotry and like that. But it's a tradition that's been around a long time but needs to be changed. That's a motivation, right? Especially if you were kind of born into the tradition and you can see that it needs to change to survive. Yeah. You know, I'm going to use Rotary again as an example. Rotary had a tradition, a rule. I don't know if it was really a rule, but it was a tradition of being all men, right? All men. And if I may say it, in all men of a similar bent, mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, they looked at that tradition and they looked at it late. Like, it wasn't like they were the first ones. They waited. And they weren't in trouble with the government or anything because it's not discriminatory. Well, I don't think that they were sued for discriminatory. But they made an internal decision to seek out women. I don't know that women weren't allowed, kind of a gray area, but they weren't allowed. Maybe not by the actual rules of Rotary, but there weren't any, so they weren't allowed. And then Rotary made a decision when women became more prominent in business, right, to seek out professional women. Yeah, that was a tradition change. And I'm certain that there was lots of argument back and forth. They did not change, at least my club. I mean, I don't know about other clubs, and I don't know if this was like an international rule or something. But they didn't change until the 80s. So it was not exactly the first, but they looked around and said, you know, we could use more members. And, you know, each member pays dues. And, you know, the bigger organization we are, the more power we'll have, the more say we'll have, the more we can do in the world. Mm-hmm. So let's change that tradition. Yeah, it's a good point. Quite a few of you happen to be Rotarians in other countries. Thank you for all your participation. And Hassan and others are saying that in their area, Rotary is still all men. Mm-hmm. So it's obviously not an international rule from the organization, but it's a tradition change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as women enter more into the professions and are more, oh, I don't like to say desirable to network with, but, well, you know, more desirable to network with, yeah, things change, right? The first women in the Rotary Club here were judges, actual lawyers and judges and politicians and things. Yeah, you wanted to know them. So that helped, that motivated the tradition change, right? Yeah. So true. Francine and others are saying that also modern technology has made practices obsolete, and you need to get together within the tradition. Mm-hmm. Modern technology has made some practices obsolete, and you need to get together within the tradition, within the group itself. You're not fighting the group. You're trying to save it, right? You're trying to bring it into the modern world. You're trying to make it better. That's what happened with Rotary, right? We're trying to dismantle it. No, you were trying to make a new tradition that is more in accord with the modern world. The world changes, and now the world changes kind of rapidly because of technology, and traditions need to evolve so that they can stay alive, so the group can stay alive and be relevant, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hassan and others are mentioning generational change. I think that's really kind of true, that it's part of a tradition change, that each generation has their own way of thinking, their own way of doing things. This particular point in history, there is kind of a slightly bigger generational gap, maybe, because of the technology gap, right? The older generations, and that doesn't mean they can't learn how, for heaven's sakes, are not quite as technology easy as the new ones. Mm-hmm. And it is an interesting discussion that's beyond the scope of this show, of this moment. We may talk about it. Yeah, people are bringing up privacy issues. Mm-hmm. Is that a motivation to keep it private? Okay. It's an interesting point. I don't know that it's a whole show. People say maybe it's a show. Privacy issues are an interesting little kettle of fish there, because the technology is a little invasive, at least from the standpoint of older generations. But people who have grown up with it have less of an expectation of privacy. Yeah. And I know that that's true, really, because I see the difference in Facebook pages and in what's posted online. And I do some hiring, and I do quite a bit of consulting, right? And I see that people put stuff online, younger people, the people who are coming up now to be business people, wow, they post stuff online that's really, yeah, naked pictures. No, but really, really very personal, in my opinion. But they post everything online. They don't think it's personal at all. They their whole lives are open and online. You see? And it's a different way of thinking about it. And it's interesting because sometimes people act like online isn't forever. And it kind of is. Yeah. So that's, yes, it's a generational idea. Yeah. So that's a generational tradition change. And there's a lot of groups that get together because of an interest in the modern world, an interest in technology in some way, and an interest in what to do with it and how it should be handled. And yes, and how government should handle it. Good point. Yes. Thank you for your participation. Tanique and others are talking about a tradition change that I'm going to call kind of an educational change. She's using the example that traditions change over time due to what people know and what they've been taught, and that groups get together and point out the difficulties to the holders of the tradition. This is a very good example. The Catholic Church is actually being used as an example because they used to do everything in Latin in the United States, right? But then there came, gradually the education changed and nobody understood the Latin. It was like chanting magic words in a foreign language that you didn't understand. Yeah? What good is that? So the tradition-bound Catholic Church decided to use the native tongue and not Latin, like English or Spanish or whatever. Yeah, and see, that's, you know, you can't get more tradition-bound than something like the Catholic Church. But that's a change from within, motivated by the participants in the religion. Yeah. And also, yeah, it's a good point. It's motivated by economics, too, because if people don't understand what they're saying, they're not really connected to the church, and they're going to go and seek religious solace somewhere else. Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. Yep, Jen and others are also saying that participants are motivated within a tradition by attempting to create new traditions. Mm-hmm. New traditions. Jen and others are giving the example of inclusion of different kinds of people that were never included before, like people with different sexual orientations. That's a new tradition within some places. Yeah. Or women. Mm-hmm. Yeah, women. Different sex. Women. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've talked about now the positive motivation. I see something that's wrong, and it needs to be changed. And I see there are like-minded people. Let's be motivated as a group so that we can share the responsibility, so that we can pool our resources and our knowledge, and we can go further. Yeah. So that's positive motivation. We want to right a wrong. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what about this restrictive motivation, which we kind of touched on at the beginning of this show? What about that? What about the restrictive part, where you've got to? You're motivated by fear, really. Fear or loss. If you don't do something, you're going to lose something. Mostly it is very definite what the prize is if you participate, if you're motivated, and what the consequence is if you don't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are pointing out workplace ones. Yeah. We talked about the kind where you are forced into the group because of something bad you did, right? Yeah. Or because of peer pressure, because you joined a group that does that kind of stuff, and well, all right, it's my turn, so I'll go do it. But how about the workplace one? Yeah. People are talking about the workplace motivation dynamic. Mm-hmm. And it's really restrictive, right? Because, as Lydia says, it's a requirement or you lose your employment. Yeah, that's restrictive. It's fear of loss. It's fear of losing your job, right? Yeah. James and others are saying that the participation motivation is to fulfill an educational requirement. For example, lawyers, we have in a lot of states, we have continuing legal education requirements to keep us up to date in our field. And if we don't by the class, if we don't listen to it, if we don't get the check mark next to our name, we lose our license. Ha, talk about restrictive motivation. Gotta go. Gotta do it. Don't want to lose my license, right? Yeah. Requirement, you might lose your employment, you might lose your license. That would be bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's a way of enforcing the requirement, right? Yeah, it's got the carrot and the stick thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Krista and others are saying that in the workplace, the most restrictive motivation is when you have committee participation to feign interest. I'm supposed to be interested in this. I'm supposed to care. So I'm going to go on this committee, and I'm motivated because other people are watching me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Divita and others are saying the same thing about charitable participation for credit. Yeah. That's a common workplace thing, isn't it? We're all supposed to do something charitable, maybe as a group, and we get credit for it. Yeah. Credit with our boss. Credit with, we have charitable fulfillment requirements. Yeah. It's kind of like that Rotary, or which is not a business, but still. And a lot of big organizations want to check off a box that their employees spent a certain number of hours in the community doing something charitable. Mm-hmm. Big ones, yeah. One of the biggest of all is Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's really rather nice because you get to pick your charity. They don't require a certain one. And they pay you for your time, like as though you were employed, as though you were standing and working for them. And the charity gets the benefit. And I think it really is. That's not even restrictive, really. I mean, I suppose if you're completely uncharitable, it is, because it makes you do something for someone else, but you get to pick which someone else. Excuse me, you don't all have to do the same thing. Oh, well, okay. I'm going to say usually, because some of you work for Starbucks or know someone who does, and I gather sometimes they make teams that are the employees in a certain shop or something or a district, and you have to do the team thing. Okay, so it's kind of like a workplace thing. Yeah, it is a workplace thing. I thought you always got to choose, but I guess not. There's some peer pressure. Okay. What's the other big restrictive motivation that people have? And, oh, we're going to run out of time, I think. I don't know that we're going to get, we may get to one recipe. I know. We kind of get excited about talking to each other, and thank you for all of your participation. And then we run short on time. We don't get to the recipes. And I'm sorry. Maybe we'll get one of them, and we've got about 5 minutes. So fear of expulsion is the other big restrictive motivation. And it's really like peer pressure. Quinton says you want to be included in the group, but don't personally care. Yay, team. Yeah, that's what I said sometimes about that Rotary stuff. It's restrictive because you kind of need to go. It's a requirement. Now, you volunteered for the group. I mean, it's not like workplace. You're going to lose your job. But you've got peer pressure. And as Quinton says, you want to be included in the group, but you don't personally care. Mm-hmm. You're doing it because you don't want to be expelled. You want to be included. You want to be included next time the group goes. I mean, you don't care about the thing, but you do like the networking. You like the lunch afterwards where everybody gets together and laughs and eats pizza. That kind of a thing. Fear of expulsion. You want to be asked to join. You want to be part of the group. You don't care about whatever the group is doing, really. But you want to be part of it because you care about the people, right? And you care about their impression of you. And if that's the motivation for your participants, that's an interesting group dynamic, and you have to be aware of it. You have to be aware of the very, very powerful pressure of I want to be part of this group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, a lot of people are saying fear of God is fear of expulsion, the biggest restrictive motivator. Fear of God. Mm-hmm. And whatever your religion is, that's kind of true. You don't want to displease God, right? And fear of God punishing in action, as Julie says. Fear of God punishing in action. Mm-hmm. And then Emilio and others are talking about the fear of religious repercussions from the religious leaders, because they're kind of the enforcers of God, right? They know what God would like you to do, yeah? So fear of God and being punished is a big restrictive motivation. I need to do the right thing as defined by my religious leader. Yeah. And that's a big motivator. And it's a particularly, yeah, people, a lot of you, and thank you for being here, and thank you for listening. A lot of you are in other countries than the United States. It's true in the United States, too. But religion, if you're, especially if your society is very, the basically speaking, everybody's the same religion, and it is perhaps even a state-mandated religion, the government really is not non-sectarian, that there's really a state religion. Wow, that's the fear of being punished by religious leader is a real threat. That's a restrictive motivation, as is fear of God, because you think, because you believe, you have faith that they know what they're doing. Yeah, that they understand the word of God. And I got to tell you, I myself am religious in the sense that I'm a believer in God and in right and wrong and like that. And I've seen people of my faith, just, well, Christianity, have strange interpretations. And that is something that you need to deal with within a group dynamic. Mm-hmm. And it's not to be taken lightly, and it's not to be... not to be belittled in any way, because that's a tremendous restrictive motivation. This is true. Mm-hmm. Fear of repercussions. Yeah. Yeah. Emilio and others are saying that it's also fear of being different, so you're pressured to conform. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fear of being different. People don't like the different. It makes them nervous. And a lot of people in this world like to conform. It is easy, and you know what the rules are. Hard to think outside of the box, right? The fear of being different, so you're pressured to conform. That is a big restrictive motivation. And something to be understood and acknowledged by the leader. Mm-hmm. Yeah. These are motives in the room affecting the group dynamic that are really important. They're important to the lives of your people, of your participants. They're important to how they think, how they'll react. Good point. And it is, you know, people are saying it's a preconceived notion. And we have talked about that on prior shows. And sometimes it kind of is. But you have to think about it. You have to think about the individual. And you know, a lot of times your individual participants are motivated by the desire for change, and they will surprise you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Oh, and I see that we are almost out of time, and we haven't done the recipes. We'll do them next time. I particularly like the shepherd's pie one. I'll try to get to it next time because, well, I shouldn't say this in advance, but it's a wonderful way to use leftover mashed potatoes. Oh, never mind. But we will get to that next time, and I apologize. But we had such a good discussion. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for thinking with us. Yes. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Yes. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. We are actually out of time. Boy, that went fast. Thank you for your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.